Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. I'm super excited today. It is October 30th, the day before Halloween. Now, we're not doing a show tomorrow, so this is my big Halloween show. I'm very, very excited, and we've got the coolest guest in honor of that. He's a fantastic director, co-writer, co-producer. Fantastic new movie just coming out, and man, there's just such a neat story about this. We're going to talk about it. Without further ado, the name of the movie is House Sitter, The Night They Saved Siegfried's Brain, and I would like to welcome the director, co-writer, and co-producer, Mr. Robin Newman. I hit the wrong button there. Robin, how are you?
I'm very well. Just two corrections, and I'm not somebody that gets too picky with stuff, but I'm not sure. Siegfried didn't sound like Siegfried, and we've had a lot of confusion with the name, with the I-E, except after C, but it is The Night They Saved Siegfried's Brain, and my last name is Nyan.
Nyan.
Today, for like 30 minutes, there will be no lion from Nyan. After that, no guarantees.
I love it.
And
I'm
that
so
is
sorry
not a standard
that.
Line that I that that's not a standard line. That's okay. Anyway, thank you so much for having me. This is very, very, very cool.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. It's I'm so excited. This is such a cool thing, and I have to tell you, I'm not in the movie business. I'm a painter by trade. I paint pictures of people for a living and different things. But I'm a cinephile. I'm that friend that you have that has the outdoor theater, and you know, I make all my friends watch movies and subtitles and stuff. I'm that guy, and
I
grew up in the '80s. And your film, I mean, I have all kinds of horror movie friends that are horror movie, you know, like hardcore. You know, they'll lecture you
right.
on how a spleen didn't look realistic when it exploded. You know, I mean. Like, how do you know?
We use
but anyway,
real planes.
I think you did. The practical effects
yeah.
in this
all
it's just amazing.
Were real. Yeah.
I love it. Well, one of the things is the trope that you always hear from these from my friends, at least that I always hear, is they're like, well, they don't make the horror movies like they did in the '80s, and blah blah blah. And oh, if they'd only do that again, and na 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 na. Well. Here you go. The answer to your prayers has happened. Tell us, walk us through this. You guys filmed this, you made this movie in 1987, right?
Right. And there's been a couple of, you know, different times. We were at a film festival, and we were at the American Film Market last year, almost at this exact same time, a week later, I guess, trying to sell the movie, shopping it around. And I can't tell you how many people go, okay, we're in on the gag. You actually made it recently to make it look like the '80s, right? And this, you're trying to create this story of it sat in a vault for 27 years and nobody touched it. And then finally, 32 years later, you finish the movie. Hey, pretty good calling card. And then the trailer, I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but the trailer is, you know,
oh, yeah.
really great. And so people go, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. So what's true? And I'm going, everything? We made it in 1987, went back to my hometown with my brother Mark. His hometown too. Oh, we grew up in the same house. And my friend, obviously Richard Gasparian, who I met in college in 1975, six, seven, right in there. And, we all decided to make a movie, and then we filmed it in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where I met Richard and where Mark and I are from, and it was a struggle to get through production on a pretty regular basis, day to day, to finish the movie, because money was just tough to come by. You know, we had never made a film before.
Right.
We had shot a 16-millimeter film. I had made some 8-millimeter films years ago, but we'd never made this. And everybody in L.A. was going, you can't just go out and make a movie. You've never done it before. And it's like, you know, you're 30 years old, and your first impulse is, fuck you. You know, I mean, that's
right.
Really how it was. And then we were going to make a movie in, I was living in North Hollywood at the time in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. And we had read an article in the, you know, Daily Variety or Hollywood Reporter, whatever it was, that said, if you can make a low-budget horror movie, you can sell it to certain markets, and they listed all the places, and get your money back, make a bunch of money. And I thought, and Richard, we're all
sounds
thinking,
pretty good.
Well, let's just do that, you know, and go from there. And
then we'll make Citizen Kane down the road.
Well,
I got it.
Really,
nice.
I'm thinking I wanted to make Blood Simple, you know.
Right. Nice.
I love, you know,
nice.
film noir is my thing, you know. That's my real
right.
love, that and westerns, you know. So I wanted to do a film noir western, but I figured if we could make this, film it in my house without the landlord knowing, and shoot it on 16-millimeter, and we'll make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on the back picnic table. We can do this for maybe $50,000. I mean, you know, I can give blood that many times to get that much, and we'll make a fucking movie. And
right.
Then we wrote the parts. Richard and I met in college. We wrote the parts literally for 3 college professors that we had. And when we asked them to do it, we were hoping they would, but we didn't know. And they said, we'll love to do it. And we said, we're doing it here, and kind of came back like, we're not coming there. So we went, you know, the Muhammad mountain metaphor. And we went there.
Right.
And once we went back to Kalamazoo, boy, oh, boy, did things change. Because in 1987, unlike taking your iPhone out, making a movie, it was a big deal. Especially in Kalamazoo.
Oh, yeah.
And that's my hometown. I'm not talking bad mouth. I'm just saying we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of resumes of people that wanted to work on the movie, just short of asking if they could pay us to work on it. It's the only 35-millimeter, and I think and I appreciate that some people appreciate the fact that it shot on 35-millimeter because the depth and the coloring at certain spots is unbelievable. You cannot get that unless it's that. And so we went back to Kalamazoo, and people wanted to work on it. People wanted to help us out. And the first thing, Richard stayed back here. I went to Kalamazoo to try to lay some groundwork. Richard was back here finishing up something he was working on and also interviewing people. We still didn't, you know, have all of our people around the camera. So Richard was dealing with that and also dealing with some pre-production stuff from LA, film packages, that kind of thing. And I went back to Kalamazoo to find
right.
a place to film the movie and to lay the groundwork. I ended up in a bar one day, surprise. And it's funny because I was sober for 2 years there. And in those 2 years I was sober, I made a movie. But anyway, obviously, another story.
It's amazing what things you can get done. That's awesome.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy concept. But I'm back there again, so that's a good thing. But anyway, I'm sitting in a bar having my club soda just by myself in a dark bar because I like dark bars. And
right.
this guy goes, he goes, Robin, how you doing? I go, oh, my God. Tim, how you doing? He goes, good. I've been reading all about you guys and making a movie. And I said, yeah, pretty crazy. And he goes, man, how cool is this? I go, pretty cool. And he goes, you should film at the castle. I go, well, wouldn't that be great? And he goes, well, I'm the caretaker. This was the beginning of things that ended up being, here's how I can get you into the castle. Here's how I can get you into film at K College. Here's how I can get you. We ended up getting 15 free hotel rooms at the Radisson for the entire people flying in from out of town for free because home kids came home to make a movie. And it lasted all the way through of people going, this is crazy. This movie is different. I had a thing we filmed, and believe me, this interview is happening, I think, because of some people we've dealt with. But I remember I was filling out the form, And they, one of the questions was, it was a, it's a PR company, which has been really fantastic. And get things like this that I never anticipated, but I haven't anticipated everything. I have a good morning theory at Disney. Anyway, the movie set in the vault for 27 years because after all this stuff happened, like I say, starting with the castle and the free rooms and filming at the old college and filming at the new college and everybody up to this point, nobody's charging us yet for nothing. And when I needed a big power pole put into the backyard of the castle because the castle's electricity system was started in 1896 and we were blowing everything because we had big 5Ks and 10Ks because what started out as, you know, 12 people making a, you know, 12 people guerrilla warfare making a movie in North Hollywood on 16 millimeter became turning around with 5Ks, 10K lights going up with 300 people looking at you going, what are we doing next, Rob? And I'm like, fuck, I don't know. I'm looking at all you people going, wow, when did this happen? And it was similar to the feeling after, I mean, the movie's literally, we ran out of money, but we shopped it from 1987 to 1990, trying to raise more money. And we had a lot of offers from film companies out here that wanted the movie, but everybody wanted to own it. And Richard and I and Mark, we all said the same thing. I didn't go through this to have somebody else own this.
Absolutely.
And we said no.
Absolutely.
And so then it sat there for 27 years in a vault at Photochem, literally the largest film processing place in the world. In a vault, literally a vault. For 27 years, Richard and I got married, had kids, had full-time jobs. My life became about health insurance, you know, not necessarily my own, but I was married with kids, you know, I'm not going to, that's what it's about. Taking care of shit. So it's that for 27 years. Life, as John Lennon says, life happens while you're making other plans. And that's the gig. And a combination of things. A few years ago, I was turning 60, and I made a list. I've only had two birthday lists my entire life. When I turned 30, something happened where I'm like, okay, you can't keep, you know, getting high every day and drinking too much. You're going to turn 30. You need to make a change. So what I did for that was I made a movie. I wrote with Richard. We co-wrote it. We co-produced it, he starred in it, and I directed it. We made a fucking movie. And then that was at 30. And when I was getting ready to turn 60, it was the only other time in my life where I went, okay, this is a big birthday. Not 40, not 50, not 10, not 20, 30 and 60. Because you realize at 30, what I'm going to do is starts now. At 60, you're going, well, you're going to die. So how do you want to end things? And I didn't want to end things knowing I never finished the movie. It has haunted me. As much as anything could haunt any human being, it has haunted me that all these people over the years put in their time, their effort, their love, their money, and that it wasn't going to get finished. It didn't seem fair, but it didn't seem right. I said, for my 60th birthday, I'm going to finish the movie. And I figured it would take a year, so I started at 59, and it ended up taking 3 years to finish it.
Right.
But I have a theory. I try to say I've worked at Walt Disney Studios for 30 years. I just retired a month ago because of the studio's not the studio anymore because of what's going on in the world. Pretty hard to be walking down, you know, Happy Boulevard at the Disney lot while you got a mask on and feel sick, you know. Let me head over to Mini Boulevard because maybe that'll pep me up. So I have a good morning theory, and for many years, my whole life, even back to junior high, I always said hi to everybody in the morning because my dad always did that. And my theory is you say hi to everybody, you give them the option whether they want to say good morning back. And what usually comes back is half the people go, good morning. The other people go, why are you saying good morning? I said good morning to a guy at Disney for 3 years. The one weekend I did work in his office, construction kind of stuff, and I see all these horror sci-fi posters. And I'm going, wow,
right.
He would love our movie. He parked down to my construction cage down on P1 at the studio there in the parking lot. He pulls in after I saw his posters on Saturday working on the weekend. On Monday morning, he pulls in. I go, good morning. He goes, good morning. This has been going on for 3 years. I go, do you have a minute? He goes, sure, what's up? And he's thinking, like, we're good morning people.
Right.
And we're not checked up people. We're good morning people. We're not, we don't talk. We just, he's an executive, right? I'm down there doing construction.
Right.
He's upstairs at the top. I'm down there. I'm below ground level. So he goes, yeah, what's up? I said, I made a movie. You can see him's kind of thinking, you and everybody else in town. I'm going, of course, we live
right.
in LA and we're working at Disney. So,
right.
He goes, I said, I made this movie, and I kind of tell him the story. And he goes, why are you asking me this? I said, well, I saw your posters in your office over the weekend. I think you'll dig it. He goes, do you have it on, is there a way I can watch it? Of course, I brought the DVD because I'm thinking, I'm not asking you this without the DVD in my back pocket. So
right.
I hand it to him. He takes it home. He watches this. Next morning, he comes down. And this is a continuation of getting the castle for free. And there's a story when you hear, we'll backtrack if we have time, but to get the castle.
No, we do. We have all time in the world.
On the bar. So anyway, I give him the thing. I'm back in my little construction cage there, and he knocks on the cage and he goes, hello. And I go, what's going on? Hello. And he's like, hey, it's Rick. And I go, I'm not sure I know you, you know, because it just wasn't. He goes, you gave me the movie. I'm like, oh, you. I slide open my door there, you know, that green canvas, hard canvas construction, you know, and I come out. And
right.
Everything changed right then. Everything. I go, how you doing? He goes, good morning. He goes, I watched the movie. And I go, cool. And he goes, this is really good. This is really cool. This is really different. And I'm like, yeah, different's good. And he goes, no. He goes, what are you doing for lunch? I go, you tell me. He goes, come up to my office. I'll tell my assistant you're coming up. Come up to the office, and I want to talk to you. And I get up there.
Wow.
I gave him like 10 minutes and went into his office. And he goes, so seriously, what's the story here? And I tell him kind of the story. Made it in Kalamazoo, my hometown, my brother, my brother Mark, my friend Richard, you know. And he goes, I go, what do you think? He goes, it's really cool. And this is a guy that you can just tell where he's sitting, where he's parking. Some people
right,
can get
right.
really, really sharp. And the fact that I could tell the stuff he had in his office wasn't Main Street stuff. It was like cool shit, like old weird bobblehead dolls of Universal horror movies. Like there's a bobble weird thing of Frankenstein and the Mummy, and you're going, not many people have that shit in this. In
no,
there's not,
not a
person
a lot
on
of
this floor. Yeah, there's not a person on this floor that has that stuff in his office. Just not happening. The fact he parked next to me, here starts the weird journey, you know. So we went across the street at lunch, and we went to Photochem, which is like a block and a half away from Disney. And I go up to the desk and I say, my name is Robin Nyan and I'm here with Basement Productions. And I want to see if you still have our movie. It's been here for a while. The person at the desk goes, okay, what's the last name? Still has no idea. It's been 27 years. Right. So I go, Nyan, and it's Nancy, UIEN, BSMT Productions. And there's my buddy from my new best friend from Disney and me. And and you go, whoa, we have it, but this is from 19. Wow. You started this account in 1987? And I go, yeah. And they go, it's been 27 years since you've been here. I go, yeah. And they're like going, this is crazy. What the hell is going on? They call downstairs. And I'm not, I can embellish any story. So far I haven't. But I can add whatever. I'm telling you, and it always bothers me. Go, let me tell you the truth. And you're thinking, oh, so up to this point, you've been lying. But from here on out, you're telling me the truth. Please let me know when you're going to start lying again. So the guy calls up from downstairs, and it was like he was calling from a barrel, the sound. And he goes, we have the movie. We have the movie. And they go, what? He goes, yeah, we have the movie. And I'm thinking, wow, what is happening?
Gotta blow the
seriously,
top
what
of
is
it.
Happening? So I get the movie out. They bring it up on these, big dollies. And there it is, 5 reels of sound and 5 reels of picture.
Wow.
So I got 10 reels. I mean, big, big film reels. And
right.
My buddy said, you got to get this transferred. What's that?
I said, it's old school because that's how you shot it. You know, that's how it was done then.
No,
you know?
The whole movie is old school. I mean, even all the murders in the movie, I mean, there's, I think, 15 murders. I mean, they're all practical effects, you know. I mean, the guy has a blood bag underneath his shirt, you know.
And that's what everybody screams for. Everybody wants practical effects, you know. Everybody I know, at least, they're always going on about practical effects. And here it is, you know, because there was no choice when you guys were filming. This is amazing. But finish the story because I'm on the edge of my seat here.
So my friend from Disney goes, you got to get it transferred to digital right now. That's what you need to do first. And I go, okay. So I kind of give the film back and I'll be back in, you know, before 27 years are up. And they transferred it to digital. And I'll preface this with, at this point, nobody knew what I was up to. As much as Richard has been, I mean, like basically the two of us are one person with the writing and the producing and the making of the film. I mean, right down to the fact that I am the director of the movie, but Richard was the editor. So really he's like, you know, we've been there since the beginning. And the reason
baby as it is yours.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, it's if there's another word for 50-50 that's better, then I would use it. But right now we'll go with 50. But, I mean, to the point where we were working as, and I'll come back, I know where I'm at. When we were working as PAs at 20th Century Fox, in 1986, and we were driving around in a golf cart looking for all this shit that they needed for an auto show coming out from Detroit. And we had a mutual friend, which they're both from Michigan, which is from Southfield. So they call and they go, you know, we're a couple of actors out here in LA, and they call and they say, you know, if you want to pick up some extra money, I can put you on this auto show. Richard and I jump at the chance. Yeah, extra money, what's that? So we end up at this auto show and we're tooling around 20th Century Fox. We hadn't been here that long and we're thinking this is kind of cool. We're in a golf cart. We drive up, it's like lunchtime. They go, take the golf cart, you know, go get this, 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 and this. And instead of getting this, 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 and this, although we eventually did, we're like checking out stages and going to the commissary and going, this is cool. And so we go onto the stage. And the stage, I mean, it must have been, it was huge. I mean, huge. And there literally is nothing on this stage except a 1950s hairdryer. And I mean, nothing. And we drive on in a golf cart, and Richard and I look at it. We're both thinking, well, that's fucking weird. And we both look at each other and say, here's where it all got crazy. Simultaneously say that would make a great 1950s sci-fi horror brain transfer machine.
Right.
And that hair dryer that we found on the 20th century lot out here, we went out to the desert, put it in the living room of this, like, there's no bedrooms, but I mean, this little cheap hotel out in the Mojave Desert. We wrote the script with that hair dryer sitting in the middle of the room. that same hair dryer was the hair that was used in the movie in Kalamazoo, Michigan, 2,700 miles away.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Whoa. I'm telling you.
So I get the we get the movie out, and I'm talking to Richard. I said, I want to finish the movie. And it was a combination of things for me, and I can only speak for myself. But my dad had died, and my mother was very sick.
That's rough. Oof.
And I wanted my parents to know that I wasn't a quitter.
Gotcha. I totally understand.
So I totally get to finish the movie. So when I walked across the street and took that film out, I knew I was finishing this movie. And when I first talked to Richard, he was like, man, Robin, I don't know. Geez, you know, we'd always talked about finishing it, but, you know, it had been sitting there for 27 years.
Right.
And telling my mother, I got it going, and I'm telling my mother one day in the nursing home. And at this point, Skywalker Sound was doing our sound. And that is all the crazy stories I told you. That ranks right up there as the craziest that, you know, there we are. They're doing Star Wars in the next, you know, booth over, and they're doing our movie in the next booth, you know.
Amazing.
So I'm telling my mother, I go, Mom, everybody wants to help me finish this movie, and I don't know why. She goes, well, of course you know why. I said, what is it? And she goes, you're Bobby Nyan. It was such a mother thing to say. Conditional love for you. And the fact that it's taken you 30 years to finish it has no bearing on anything. It doesn't affect my love for you that this has frustrated you so many years. It, anyway, crazy.
Man, I
love it. Well, I love hearing Patsy Cline sing "Crazy," even though I know it's written by Willie Nelson. It's a pretty good combo.
Yeah, not bad. Well, this film
isn't bad.
I mean, this is.
Have you seen
this?
The
is one of those things. I have.
Have you seen the movie? Good.
I have. Yes, I have, and it's fantastic. And it's this. What you're telling me. This is, you know. I wouldn't have, when I was younger, I wouldn't have understood this. I just turned 50 years old, and I'm at that point in my life where I can recognize, and I'm not religious or anything like that, or, you know, anything crazy, but I know that the universe, sometimes the universe just wants things to happen, you know, in a certain way. And this is one of those situations. And regardless of the 27 years, things, sometimes dominoes just take a little bit of time to fall, you know. They do. Yeah, it's just amazing. And you know, maybe, just maybe, you know, 27 years ago, it wasn't the right time for you or Richard or anybody, you know, for this movie to come out. And now it is. You know, you've got. I mean, this is coming out. And I'm not making light of the pandemic or, you know, all the tragedy and around that and everything. But, you know, this is coming out, and everybody knows how to work a Roku right now. You know, streaming's a thing now. Computers weren't a thing 27 years ago. You know, I mean, this is amazing. I got to tell you, Robin, there are so many little projects that I've had in my life that I put on the back burner for one reason or another. And, you know, and I've always said, well, maybe one day I'll get back to that, you know. But I need to make this money here, so I got to do this and do that, you know what I mean? Just keep the hustle going. And I hear your story, and I'm going, and I'm thinking back to my own projects. I'm going, maybe it's time to revisit some of those, you know. 27
well,
years.
I think
I love it.
A positive vibe out there. You know, I think people pick up on it. And I, as corny as it sounds, I I just think being a good person, you know, people want to help you. They do, because there's, you know, I found in my own life, I get a lot more pleasure out of helping somebody than when, as much as I appreciate all the help they've given me finishing the movie, I like it better when I can help somebody else, you know. That's just the gig, I think.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit MakingCancerHistory.com.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
Absolutely. Now, Rob, I should have asked you before we started the show. We have the ability for people to call in. Is that cool for you to take a call, or would you rather not? Either way is fine. It doesn't matter.
I think it's – I got to tell you, after waiting 32 years to finish this movie, anybody wants to talk about it, I'm here.
Well, that's awesome. Let's take a call. Here we go. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
You're on the air. Robin Nyan.
Hello. 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 How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Okay. I got a couple questions. Are you really a potlicker?
Am I?
Yeah.
I never have been. And have no plans to be one.
Kalamazoo, so I want to know if you actually really are part of the you want to walk the talk. This is the executive producer calling.
Yeah, this is my brother Mark, who's the executive producer on the movie. Good to hear from you, Mark.
Yeah, hey, I thought you forgot who I was. Hey, one of the things
I
wanted to mention real quick is, you know, you touched on the family thing, but I mean, the whole city of Kalamazoo just pulled right behind us. So we had, and where was the hotel at, Bobby, that we stayed? It was it the Hilton?
Down at the Hilton.
Yeah, for what, 3 months? I mean, we had carte blanche at the Hilton, room service. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, we're here.
Yeah.
We're here.
Right, yeah.
Go ahead, Mark.
I watched it for another 27 years. Anyway, what I was trying to say is the city of Kalamazoo gave us. I mean, my mom did the catering, and, you know, it was just a tough time for her. And she'd gone like an hour and a half each way to bring the food to the staff and those types of things. And for the friend at the castle and the Hilton. And Roger Hinman was getting behind us and giving us all the locations and all the donations and time and everybody putting Bobby touched on that a bit about how I wanted to get it done because of those things. That makes me feel good to get it done. And as far as my brother, I'm so proud of what he's done and getting to the stage he's gotten at. And he can say what he wants, but I kick him in the butt a lot to get in there too. So and it kind of causes a strain on a relationship, but I'm glad I did it and I'm glad it's done. And I couldn't be more proud and have people look at it.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, we lost Mark there. I don't know. It was a weird connection, but, man.
Well, Mark has a lot of mountains around him.
Oh, I see. That's probably what it is. Yeah. It's but, yeah, he's proud of you. How could you not be hearing this story? This is amazing, you know? And it's an amazing film. I like this film a lot. So good. No, is it released now, or is it coming out next week or this weekend?
It is.
Or today,
It is very, very released right now. It's on, you can buy the DVD, you can stream it on numerous sites, including Amazon, and you can buy it on Amazon.
Nice.
And I'm trying to get it to be trending, you know, where people come up and they say, what's new for the weekend, for Halloween weekend? That what comes up is House Sitter, The Night They Saved Siegfried's Brain. And, boy, all of a sudden I use a different voice when I'm in marketing mode. I'm getting really, not just me, I mean Richard and Mark, we're all getting very good response to the film. I mean, I did one of these the other day, although I could actually see the person when we talked, but I looked you up and I have a picture of you, you know, posted so I can put the voice at the same time. And it's so spooky here that when your picture, your lips are moving when you're talking here. So it's like a Twilight Zone thing. But
I love it.
There's that old voodoo monkey thing where that happens. But I, people are really digging the movie. And I remember all the stories on people, the stories that I'm telling you, and people always go, oh my God, I don't know what's back. They go, I love the movie. But I think the story of making it and finishing it is even better than the movie. Because
that's a movie unto itself.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know who's gonna film it.
Seriously.
But, I just know when I tell the story, and I've told it numerous times, I've said at parties and I'm telling people and somebody will go, I heard you're finishing up a movie, and I kind of tell some of the stuff and how we got Skywalker and how we got Paramount and how we got this and that, and they're like, really? I can't. This is like the craziest story I've ever heard. And I think I touched on it earlier. I was doing it. I was doing a fill out for the question, and the question was what other movie would you compare your movie to? And I wrote back.
Oh man.
None.
Yeah.
And
I don't think there is one.
No.
I don't think there really is one.
And there's a lot of mistakes made in it, you know, like, and I see them every time I've watched it and I go, fuck, I wish I would have done that different. And why did we do that? And, you know, and that's fine.
Yeah,
that's all cool.
Yeah.
But at the end of it all, I think to myself, this is out there. This is crazy. You got a mad scientist in a black and white world doing hair transfers with a hair dryer. Never seen that movie before. Ever.
No.
So
and it's
you know,
a brilliant plan he has. It's a brilliant plan the mad scientist had. Of course,
oh,
you need some brains. Let a college kid stay at your house.
He directed Richard and I both in Hamlet. Yeah, he is. I think he's so great in the movie. I mean, he's good in that movie. You know, and when Richard and I were writing the script, we're going, wouldn't it be great if David could do this? And we're like, oh, my God, he'd be a great doc. And then as time went on, we're going, well, why don't we just ask him? And he did it.
People, I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Applebee's, we had sent him the script, and I get back to town, and we met for lunch, and he goes, wow, this script is that's pretty crazy. I go, yeah. What do you think? He goes, I'm in. Crazier the better.
I love it.
So, yeah.
I love it. You touched up briefly on it, but you have to tell us how you got the castle there in Kalamazoo. I'm from Detroit, and I used to go by Kalamazoo whenever I took the 94 to Chicago.
Right.
You know, I knew a lot
right.
of people in Kalamazoo. The castle's real famous.
Yeah.
You know, that's
it is
part of the country.
How
did this happen?
Well, it's up on the hill. It's up on the hill, so you can see it. And it's just up the street from Western Michigan and Kay College. Matter of fact, it almost butts up on from if you go down the backside of the castle of that it's there. And I want to. I'm sure my brother Mark is still listening. Thanks for calling in, Mark. It was hard to hear you, but love you and appreciate all the kind words. And yeah, what a crazy adventure it was in Kalamazoo. And yes, everybody was so supportive. I ended up talking to Tim in the bar there and saying, that'd be great. And he said, I'm the caretaker. Let me set something up. And I had an appointment the next day to go see the owner of the castle, who was an attorney named Fred Royce. And I go into the lower part of the castle, and his assistant, his secretary, a really cool lady named Terry, was sitting there. And I said, I'm here to see Fred. And she goes, yeah, I know, you know. I mean, I'm not being a dick about it, but you just can't believe how much publicity was happening in 1987 with a movie coming to film from L.A. And, I mean, radio, TV, news, constantly, everywhere. And I get a lot of people deal with that much in a much larger scale. But it was just, and it was a good vibe. It was a fun vibe.
Right.
And so Terry says, well, he's up on the roof in the hot tub. And I'm like, okay. So I head up
upstairs
and I do the, like the twirl stairs that go up to the roof. And I get up there and he's sitting in the hot tub with his beautiful, wonderful, funny girlfriend. And they're both and I'm, you know, I'm coming up like dum 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 dum, you know, and I see him and I go, how you doing? You're Robin. I'm Robin. You know, hop in. Went in Rome, so I'm thinking to myself, you know, I gotta come from L.A. to Kalamazoo, Michigan, to have my Hollywood moment. And I get in and we're all naked and we're just talking about stuff in Kalamazoo. And you can see from the hot tub, you can see downtown Kalamazoo and all the houses all around and the trees. It's beautiful. I mean, it's like you're on top of the castle looking at everything. And so eventually we get around to the movie and he goes, you want to make the movie here? And I said, boy, we'd love to make the movie here at the castle. I mean, my God. And it ended up, obviously, if you've seen them, as you have seen the movie, it just adds a production value and another character almost to the film of the castle. And we had gone back and I had looked at this point like 10 or 12 before I saw Tim at the bar, 10 or 12 3-bedroom, 2-bath houses, which were like the house the script was written for when we were in North Hollywood. So I'm looking at all these houses. I'm going, man, this isn't it. And you're thinking you're going to make this low budget movie. And then we got the castle. And boy, did things change. Because now the horror movie from L.A. is now filming at the most famous place in town. And it just kept getting bigger from there. It was like this stone coming down a mountain you couldn't stop. And I remember many times when it was when we were filming, setting up there, and it's just all lit up, and you can see it from everywhere with 5Ks and 10K lights going and whatever. But I say to he goes, so you want to make the so we're sitting in the hot tub, and he goes, you want to make the movie here? I said, I'd love to make the movie here. And he goes, what are you offering? And I said, $5,000, $1,000 a week, 5 week shoot, $5,000. He goes, let's do it. I go, wow, I would have known it had been so easy, I wouldn't have offered so much money. And he goes, what would you have offered? I go, I would have offered fucking nothing. And he goes, let's do that then. And that's what we did.
Wow.
He, just like that. And then him and his girlfriend are in the movie constantly. They play the kissing couple. And they're in the background in a lot of scenes at the party kissing. And he also, you know, takes his pants down one of the intros, you know, people are coming in the front door and he takes his pants down. And you know, he was just, he, I don't, you could not find somebody cooler and hipper to say, can we use your castle to make a movie? And he's like, oh my God, this is fun. And he literally just opened up the place to us. And then we were having power problems because we kept blowing out what was originally 1896 electricity in the place. And we're like, we need separate power. And I got a hold of the city power company, Consumers Power. And I said, I need a power pole brought out here to the where the castle is. No need to even use the address. You just tell them you're at the castle. And they showed up and they put in. Yeah. And they put in a huge, huge power pole. And the producer part of me was going, what's this going to cost? And the director part of me was going, oh, man, these lights are going to be great. This power is going to be late. We can finally not have to stop and start. We're not going to blow shit. We can just, you know, get going. So I said, what is this going to cost me? And he goes, well, you know, my wife heard your radio interview this morning. And when I left the house, she said, and I told her what I was doing, and she said, you better take care of them. And I'm like, okay. So he said, you know, no charge. And
amazing.
I went, really? And he goes, yeah, you know, that's what my wife wanted me to do. And I'm thinking, thank you, baby. You know, here's your cup of coffee, and you take care of those guys that came back to Kalamazoo, Michigan to make a movie. And they put up the power pole, and we shot for the next 5 weeks there running power off. And I hope the bill doesn't come now, but, you know, we never got a bill. Literally never got a bill. That's the kind of stuff that just –
that would not have happened that way. That would not have played out that way in L.A. It just wouldn't have. You know, there would have been permit.
No.
You know.
Yeah. Well, everything's permitted and everything's about making the money. But, no, you couldn't have done what happened. And I know Mark touched on it. And I think that was a big part of what Mark's point was when he called in was, you could not believe. I mean, if you stayed through the end credits of the movie, there must be 150 names on there from Kalamazoo companies that were thanking for like giving us stuff for the movie. Because if you look at the set dressing, if you look at the brains, if you look at the lab, if you look at, I mean, weird stuff in the lab that you don't really get until the second or third viewing that's stacked up on a shelf, or there's a shadow here that's telling you something about what's happening in the next scene. And all that stuff we got was all because people in Kalamazoo went, we're behind you. Thanks for coming back. It was crazy. Really crazy.
That's so cool.
So we,
you know, it really says something about the people there, you know, that Midwestern niceness and embracement. You know, I mean, people, they see that you're passionate about this and they get on board too. That's just fantastic, you know. Man, we need more of that in the world. We really do.
We need a lot more of that in the world. But yeah, they were way cool, and we ended up shooting at Western Michigan, and they helped us out. They gave us the green room in the theater, and we built the old theater where we met the professors at Western Michigan. is where we built the laboratory. And we built the lab in such a way that you could pull out all the walls and move the camera in so we didn't have to, you know, change things out too much. We knew that we were able to build that lab. And we also used the scene shop to build the set, and we used the costume shots to do the costumes, and we did the makeup rooms all from the college that Richard and I met at and that the professors were all from. So it's like, you need a place to shoot? Okay, here's your alumni going, do whatever you want to do. Just on and on and on and on. So,
ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, this, so many valuable lessons in this talk today. No matter what type of, you know, whether you're making a movie or not, whatever kind of project you're doing, it pays. Here's the big takeaways. Say good morning to people. Smile. Be nice. You never know. People will help you, and people will be nice to you if you're nice to them. It's what a concept. It is. Oh, man. I'm excited. And, you know, I have to say, too, when I watch this film, you're definitely right about the, you know, filming this with the 35 millimeter, because it's it comes out real crisp, you know, and like you said, depth in it. It's just fantastic.
Yes.
You know, this was not shot with an iPhone, ladies and gentlemen. You can definitely tell, you know, and
maybe we get
used to seeing films way now, you know, that you see this and you're like, whoa, that's amazing.
I'm not trying to be a dick about it, but people that get it, they get it, because I remember I don't want to say group, but there's three guys, I guess, and it doesn't matter that they're guys or anything, but could have been aliens, but we did a film festival in Grand Rapids right after we finished the movie. And it would have been great if we could have been back in Kalamazoo to show it, because that's where we shot it. And my brother was producing. Mark had put together a screening at the State Theater in Kalamazoo for April 4th. And, you know, beautiful old, I guess what they call a movie palace, and really majestic, 1,500 seats with the stars and the balconies. And it was going to be this big screening. Well, it didn't happen because of the virus. But we were in Grand Rapids, and I'm in the lobby after the movie, and these three guys come up. And, I mean, I say young. They're probably mid to late 20s kind of thing. And they come up and they go, I can't believe that shot on film. My God, that was so – like they were like going back in time of somebody – I mean, you know, my favorite movies, I think I have a lot of different favorite movies and periods and everything, but as far as sci-fi horror stuff is the 1950s. I mean, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is one of my all-time favorite films ever. I mean, I just watched it like 3 days ago, you know, getting in my Halloween mood. It's like, oh, I'm going to watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But the fact that these kids appreciated the 35 millimeter, I'm like, yeah, 35 millimeter. Now, it got in the way because the biggest expense of our entire film was the processing of the 35 millimeter film. That was
I can imagine. Yeah.
Well, it took us. Go ahead.
You know, even with your directing and whatnot, I mean, you know, today they do a shot and then they can watch the shot right then and there, you know, with digital and whatnot. You had to wait, or shoot in the scene.
You 27 years.
Exactly. Well, it's amazing. It is amazing. And now Skywalker Ranch, like you said, that's a big deal. That is, and for those who don't know, those are Skywalker, you know the name? Those that are doing Star Wars. I mean, that's a big production. You had to freak out when that happened.
I had been talking to a guy in the commissary, the outdoor commissary at Disney, and he was there one day on a Friday, which is important. Well, it's not that important what's going on in the world, but he was only there on Fridays. And I'm talking to him, and the next Friday he's there and we're talking. And the next Friday he's there and we're talking. Always about pretty much the same two things, movies and politics. So
right.
We're talking, and I finally said to him, I said, man, I've worked here at Disney for 26, 27 years at this point, and I've never seen you before. What's your gig? He goes, oh, I'm working across the street. I was at ABC building, which is right across the street from the main lot. We were in the commissary at ABC for the same reasons, get away from stuff. So he goes, oh, I'm working across the street on this movie. And I go, really, what do you do? And he goes, I'm a sound guy. I go, wow, that's pretty cool. What are you working on? He goes, Pirates of the Caribbean 44 or whatever it was. And
right.
I go, wow. And I literally just got the movie out of Photochem. And I tell him kind of the story. And he's going, wow, that's quite a story. I go, yeah, all these years later. And he goes, huh, how's the sound? I go, well, the sound really sucks. And he goes, really? I go, yeah, we put the money around the camera, and the picture looks great. The DP was paid very, very well for 1987, very well. But we all decided that we wanted to put the money around the camera so it looked good. And we got a sound guy who was great. He had never done a movie before. He was from Kalamazoo, and I'm not picking on him because he's a very cool guy, and he did, we were shooting in crazy places, stairwells, roofs, basements, closets. But you just couldn't hear it. And I call me old-fashioned, but I'm a firm believer if you can't hear the movie and see the movie, it's fucked up. You can't, you're behind the eight ball before you even start. So we're talking, and he goes, well, I'd like to help you. He goes, you have a clip or something? So I have a clip on my phone, and I show him a clip from the lab when the brains all go haywire. It literally is my favorite scene in the movie. You can feel, not being too corny, you can feel the love I have for that scene, because I just love that scene. I don't care if you don't like anything else about the movie. There's no way you can watch Doc say red positive, black negative, who can tell them black and white, and watch a Folgers can try to hook up some Ever Ready batteries without going, this is fun. You just can't. I don't care if you hate everything else about the movie. You have to love that scene. So
absolutely.
I'm talking, and he goes, well, we'll go over across the street on the weekend and we'll tweak. But he watches the scene from the brains going bad. And then Doc goes, brains, 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 I need brains. And he looks at the clip and he goes, wow, this is really cool. Almost the exact words as the guy that took the movie across the street at Photochem. This is really cool.
Right.
And Richard and I, Mark, we're all thinking, yeah. But nobody's, So he goes, I really want to help you, and I love this story, and then we tried to go across the street, and that didn't work out. And he goes, well, we're just going to have to go where I work most of the time. And I go, yeah, what's that? And he goes, Skywalker Ranch. And I'm like, really? You work at Skywalker? And he's like, yeah, for the last 27 years. I said, so what's going to happen? I'm going to go up there, and we're going to work on the movie. And he goes, let me talk to the general manager and tell him, here's the story, and tell him your story, because he likes this kind of stuff. And he likes to help people for this kind of stuff. And Skywalker likes to help people for this kind of stuff. Let me talk to him, but he's cool. And I go, wow, what's this going to cost me? And he goes, you could never afford me. And he wasn't being a dick. He was just looking at me straight on going, you could never afford me. And I just go, so what are we going to do? And he goes, I'm going to give you the family and friends discount. And boy, did he. And he wouldn't charge us to work on it. So we got Skywalker gave us the studio to film it or to do the sound in, gave us the, it's not the studio, but the whatever. And then he gave us his time, but it took like a year and a half at Skywalker because he was doing, Jurassic Park in London. He's doing this in New York. He's working on, he was doing big movies And then when he was like in between films and he had a week here and a week there, he'd say, okay, I got a week off. Let's meet at Skywalker. And at one point that, you know, I'm in the hallway there, and I might have mentioned this earlier, but Richard and I are out in the hallway and they're doing Star Wars, you know, next to us. And we're in the hallway and he's working on our brain transfer, just kind of fucking around. Our Scott Guteau, the sound surgeon, is doing his thing there. And literally, as we're in the hallway, Richard and I are hearing lightsabers from the new Star Wars while we're hearing the brain transfer in the next one. And we're looking at each other and we're kind of like, this is nuts, man. I mean, all I did was say good morning. Yeah, I said good morning to a guy at Disney, and now I'm at Skywalker Ranch, you know, having my sound redone.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beatty, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Roxgear, the online webshop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierox.us.
And that's exactly what happened. So we went up there I took some inappropriate fashion without being too dramatic or whatever, but it's just the way it was. But what started out, you know, and earlier I mentioned the conversation with my mother, and my mother died in August of that year. And from Disney, I got a week bereavement pay, and I took that week bereavement pay and I drove from L.A. up to Skywalker, which is just north of San Francisco. And I stopped at places in honor of my mother shortly after, and nobody was more supportive of the movie than my mother. And it's like Mark mentioned, my mother did the catering on the movie. I mean, she drove an hour there and an hour back to make sure, you know, to do the catering because she wanted to be part of it. And so I thought, you know, it'd be appropriate to take my bereavement week. And so I stopped at all the places that Santa Barbara that I remember being with my mother. And Santa Rosa that she used to talk about, that she was someplace she enjoyed. My dad, And so I went to all these places before I got to Skywalker and said, let's do it. Let's finish it. And that's what we did. Richard came up numerous times, and we finished the sound. And the whole time, the guy at Disney is just like so into hearing what's next, what are you doing now, what's going on. You know, I mean, he really pushed me. All from that Good Morning, he just goes, "You got to get this movie out there. People are going to dig it. You got to get it out there." And he goes, "Plus, you know, you guys work your ass off." So
yeah, absolutely,
I go back to him and I go, "I got this great sound, and we have this great sound, and man." I need to get the color corrected because we're still looking like our one light, which is all we could afford at the time. So everything, some things were too dark, some things were too light, some things were too medium. And he goes, "Well, you know, God, I got this friend I met, you know, years ago when I moved out here, and he knows some people, or he does that kind of thing. And let me see if I can get a hold of him. Tell him your story and see what I can do." Had no idea what literally at that point, I'm going, "Okay, whatever, thank you." Turns out the guy is literally senior vice president of worldwide post-production for Paramount Studios.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up over at Paramount, like Richard and I, like 2 days later in the executive lounge having lunch with these people as the guy's asking me on the, you know, bringing me my silver, like going, "Anything else?" And I'm like, "I don't think so. I think I'm okay." And they ended up taking that 4K. We cleaned it off the original negative, put it on 4K, gave it to Paramount, and they did the picture. And I don't, you will not ever find a movie. I'm a little biased, of course, but you'll never find a movie made on what we made this movie for look as good as this one. It looks unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a case of the DP being really good. It's 35mm, and it's what Paramount did.
A
few months ago, I was reading this biography about David Bowie, of all people, and somebody had asked him. They said, "Man, every song's a hit, and it's just, you know, great." And he kind of interrupted the guy, and he said, "You know, when you work with the best, that's what you get." And I was I'm thinking about this when you're telling this, because that's what, you know, and these are lottery wins, and not just one lottery win after lottery win after lottery. You know what I mean? And it's amazing. It's a great film. It is a fantastic film. It's one of my favorites that I've seen, not just this year, you know, in years. It is so cool because it is like a 50s. Yes, it's 80s horror comedy, but the storyline is definitely, you know, nods to the 50s sci-fi and what. I love that, you know, in a contemporary, if contemporary,
well,
1987, you know, that.
Even down to the 50s where the cop comes up and like, "Hey, there sure any kids problems over here?" You know, the original script had two police officers showing up to Doc and Cora's castle, and they both go, "We've got some complaint." "Yeah, what's going on?" And there's like a body behind them, and there's Doc and Cora answering the door. I mean, the script changed for all of them because we went to the cat, but that is straight out of, you know, how the cops are treated in The Blob. You know, it's like,
"Oh yeah,
oh, you kids need to, you kids need to get your act together." So when the cops
absolutely, and you can
kind of like,
that.
Yeah, I think it's
finish your thought. When the cops show up,
because we had a whole different original script where there were two police officers showing up at the front door, then they leave, then they come back, they discover what's going on, and we didn't ran out of time, ran out of money, never got shot, so we have to rewrite stuff as on the fly. And the guy, the person who was playing one of the cops, ended up being Mitch, who was Andy's best friend in the movie, who ends up changing, and he was going to be the cop. Well, we fired Mark and Richard, and I fired the original director because he was so condescending to everybody on the set and the crew that they're going, does he know we're not getting paid? And if he keeps being such a dick, we're going to leave? And it's like, I don't think he's getting it, because he was from L.A., from London, and he was like, oh, I'm going to have to come in and teach all these, you know, idiots how to make a movie. And everybody picked up on that.
Time.
And if you're not paying people well, you have two things that you can get by with. Number one, feed them really well, which we did, and treat everybody with respect and say, we're all in this together. And that's the only way it gets done. So when the director was being a dick, we fired him. And I became the director, which I was going to play the role of the best friend of Andy's, Mitch. Richard and I wrote the script, so we had two acting parts that we could put on tape and send to casting directors going, hey, check us out. Well, then we fired the director. So because we fired the director, then I became the director. And then the cop became the character I was doing. So now we only have one cop. And it's like, well, you can't do the two cop joke with one cop. And we'd already
It doesn't play.
No. I don't care how you move it. It's, you know, two can't become one, or one can't become two.
Right.
So we had already cast the person, and I didn't want to tell them they couldn't, you know, we weren't going to do the cop routine. So we wrote, like, that day, this scene where the cop shows up and confronts Cora as all these murders are happening, going, we're selling tickets to the police ball.
Right.
Out of nowhere.
Which
and
is
it's like,
brilliant.
What? Yeah. So then we get a sunflower seed, a sunflower, and we go, oh, that'd be funny. Let's kill her with a sunflower. So then we kill her, but the whole punchline at the end is Doc saying, you can't add new characters this late in the movie. Because
right.
we had just made it up because we fired the director, we lost a cop, we only had one cop, so we had to write a whole new scene to cover the fact that now I was the director. And it's like out of nowhere. And the reason it looks like it's out of nowhere is because it was out of nowhere.
Well, I thought it was pretty cool. Because the thing is, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, is we're talking, this is a horror comedy. Then that was kind of a mainstay of that period, you know? I'm telling you right now, you look at any of those old movies. Well, the late 80s movies, you know, creep shows and the like and whatnot. We would go to the drive-in to have a good time, to see these films. That was what we did, you know? And this just really just slides right into that. Took me right back when I was watching this. I'm like, man, I want to see this movie on a big screen.
we're hoping to do drive-ins next summer.
Nice.
So if you know any
drive-ins,
awesome.
Where
are you at? You're in Florida?
Yeah, down by Miami, Fort Lauderdale area. There's got to be some down here. If not, we could find a big wall somewhere, a building. You know,
do a little snooping around, because I'm thinking that we need to get this into the drive-ins here next summer. So if you have a place down there that you're familiar with, put a bug in their ear and tell them we're going to try to do some drive-ins next summer.
It has to happen, man. It has to happen. It just lends so perfectly to it, you know. It is such a cool movie. And the Elvis and all that. I love this on so many levels.
We had in the National Enquirer that Elvis was being seen at the Burger King down the street from the castle while we were filming. And the joke was kind of like, you know, is that Andy down there? Is that Richard down there having a burger?
Probably. He went and got down and got a shake and some onion rings. And a hamburger.
But
that's funny.
But the idea that Johnny Carson is, well, I mean, Johnny Carson's doing jokes about, you know, Elvis being seen at the drive-in at the Burger King in Kalamazoo, and then Richard's doing his thing, and all this was happening literally while we're doing the movie. And I remember that one of the things I really wanted to get in there, which we got in, I think, I could be wrong, but I think it was literally the second to the last session at Skywalker Ranch. Is I, there were two people walking around the outside of the castle there, and you don't see them talk. I mean, it looks like they're talking, but it's like background talking, right? Their lips are moving, but nothing's coming out. And I'm thinking, geez, I really want to have them mention the Elvis thing because I just think it's funny. And maybe three people that ever see the movie will get what's happened right there. But you'd have to be pretty – I was at a party, and I'm telling somebody this story about the movie, and I go – and she goes – I mean, there's probably 10, 12 people there sitting around this big table, and she goes, wow, this is crazy. Where did you film? I go, Kalamazoo. She goes, oh, where Elvis was at the Burger King in 87. And I'm like, really? This is in Los Angeles when she said that, right? So anyway, the line in the movie that we added was these two people are walking, and the woman, the girl, says to the other character, says, oh, I saw Elvis at the Burger King last night. And the guy goes, you mean you saw Andy, right? Richard's character in Elvis. He goes, oh, you mean you saw Andy? And she goes, no, Elvis. He was ordering a Whopper. And the other guy goes, double? And then she goes, you know it. And that's it, right? But there's a whole nother scene happening in front of it. So the only way you're going to get that is if you catch it. And I'm thinking to myself when I was writing it, and I was at work, and I'm kind of playing around with it, and I walk up to this woman at one of the offices there at Disney, and I go, you got a minute? And she goes, sure. I go, can you record this? I want you to play this woman talking about Elvis, and I explain it to her. And she goes, oh, that's fun. Let me do it. So I recorded it on my iPhone, and then I play the other character, right? I do it on my iPhone. Uh-huh. Now it's on my iPhone from this woman on the, you know, 8th floor there. And we record it, and it ends up being up at Skywalker and playing with it and trying to piece it into the, you know, the actual movie. And then I'm at the film festival, and I watch it, and you just hear this thing like, I saw Elvis at Burger King, you know, you get a Whopper, double, you know, and I'm like, it has nothing to do with anything except it's funny, you know?
Right.
But you have to really, have your ears open to catch it. And that's okay. I like that part of it. I don't want it smashing somebody in the face. I want somebody to go and, did you just hear something about Elvis at Burger King? And it's like, the irony is Elvis was spotted at Burger King while we were making the movie a block away.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
It is.
Well, you know, Robin, you know that this is going to be, I mean, if this was a horse, I would bet on it. This is definitely going to become a cult classic. I can tell you right now. And I know it wasn't like formulated for that. With that in mind,
no.
I don't think, you know, but it definitely is going to, that's what's going to happen. It is just, it lends itself so well to that. And the production of it, you know, I mean, just when I was watching it, I'm like, because you have to understand, and I'm not throwing shade at anybody, as the youngsters say today, but I watch a lot of independent film just because of the show, you know, I do.
Sure.
And you don't see the production quality or hear the production quality that I did. I mean, I was really, it really stood out, you know, I was like, wow. Because in the press, I got from October Coast, the PR company that set all the, you know, us meeting and everything, and they're great over there, Clint and the gang. You know, it just said that, you know, that you guys, basically, Jets was this sat in the vault for 27 years, you know, it got a little bit into it, but none of the story that you told, you know, I'm like, well, they spent some money. I thought going into this, after watching the film, we were going to talk, and you're going to like, well, you know, yeah, it's been 27 years, but, you know, I have a giant pile of money that I threw at this now, and that's why it looks and sounds the way it did. It makes it even so much more special, you know?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know where the money was going to come from when we decided to finish it, when Richard and I said, okay. And like I say, I wouldn't even have attempted this obviously without Richard on board and Mark on board. But we knew, Richard and I knew, once we decided to finish, to say, okay, let's finish it, we weren't stopping again. I mean, whatever it took,
right.
If I have to take out a home equity loan, if I have to sell blood, I'm not being dramatic. I'm just saying one way or the other. And the fact I've been working for all these years, I had some saved a little money, and it didn't matter. I needed to finish the movie. I didn't want to go from 60 to death having people asking me, whatever happened to that movie? Or somebody asking me, when am I going to get my money back? It's like, you know what? There was only one way that anybody was ever going to get their investment back. And we ended up, my brother Mark, the executive producer, put in the first money and a big chunk that got everything rolling. And obviously it couldn't have happened without him. But I always looked at this as the infamous three-legged stool, very popular in the Revolutionary War period. If any one of those three legs falls out, obviously you're going to fall on your ass. There was,
right.
If any one of the three people involved in this movie wasn't part of the movie, it wasn't going to happen. And that's how I always felt about it right up until now. And I knew something was very important to me, and that was at least giving the 23 investors. And what Mark did in the beginning was he put in first money, because everybody that invested after that asked the same question every single time. And that was, how much money do you make so far?
Right.
And as soon as you said, well, right, nothing yet, they're like, call me when you do. And once that first money was in there,
that's how that goes.
Amount, yeah, I get it. I get it all. And one of the reasons that we knew we had to finish the movie, at least get it in the can, I knew at the time making the movie, we were never going to have enough money for post-production. I just knew it. But I also knew if we got the
right
movie finished, at least shot, we had a chance to cut something together to raise more money. So
exact proof of concept. Yeah, you can take something to people and show and give them the pitch, you know.
But we were never going to be able to go back and try to reshoot something because, you know, you're never going to get those people together again. And how do you get people together going, oh, we ran out of money, let's do this again, you know.
Right.
But
in Kalamazoo.
It was.
Kalamazoo.
Yeah. Oh. I know you gave everything. We're back again. We need more. But
right.
I also knew one of the most important things for me, and not being trying to be dramatic or corny or full of shit or whatever, it was really important to me at this stage in my life that the investors who believed in us, who put money into the movie, who said, we believe in you to make a movie, that they had the best chance to get their money back. Whether they ever see anything, I have no idea. I really don't. I have no idea. I hope for the best, obviously. And I hope everybody gets money and makes money. But we have been spending money for 33 years. And the only way that any money was ever going to come back coming the other way. And I will say this, Mark, Richard, we've never not only have put a lot of money of our own in, and I'm not complaining. We made choices. Aristotle defines, you know, life as choices. But we've never made money. We've never got a salary. We've never got, you know, that's all part of the gig of making something that you love, like a movie. And we're all movie lovers, believe me. Huge movie lovers. Huge movie lovers. And did I mention we love movies? But there was only going to be one thing that allowed people to ever have a chance to get their money back, and that was to have the film finished in the best possible way. And what I say, because I see the mistakes in the film, and there's a lot. But what I say is, for what we shot, it's what we got. This is the best movie we could come up with for what we had in the can, and to rewrite some voiceover to make it clear. Because people would watch some of the early versions, and they go, I have no idea what's happening. And I feel very comfortable saying, watching the movie now, you get it. This guy has this relationship with this guy. He needs brains. This is what he's going to do to get brains. And these are the things that are going to complicate things until the end. And because the script, the original movie, the first cut was 2.5 hours long, we had all this, cannot believe how much stuff is not in the movie. We had so many sub-stories going. We had a neighbor lady that was watching everything from the next house over. Gone. Because it had to become, how do I make this story clear so people can follow it? So we ended up with 93
right.
minutes of a streamlined story saying, a guy needs brains, and here's why. And people like simple. Simple is good. And Einstein says, well, I love the Einstein quote of, you know, if you can't tell a story simply, you simply can't explain it. And that's
right.
what was happening for the longest time with the movie until Richard ended up re-editing the film. I think he took 11, 12, 13 minutes off, streamlined it. There's a montage early in the movie of showing Doc at his house and his son and all this stuff going on. And then there's this Alice Cooper-esque song over the top explaining what's happening, which I sang, so it was hard to cut. But and it goes over, and you're just going, you got all this momentum going. Then you get to me trying to be a singer and this montage, and you can just feel the movie go just like drop. And it's like,
right.
you got to lose that. And it was like 4 minutes long. I mean, it just was. And if somebody checks out of anything, story, movie, whether somebody's telling you a story while you're at a party, all of a sudden the eyes glaze over, you're going, I've lost them. You know, it's over. My wife gives me that look a lot, but she's heard every story 100 times, so I get it. But we ended
well,
up editing.
You know.
We ended up editing a lot of stuff out to get streamline it down to what's the basics. Doc needing brains and his student Andy trying to stop him. There's the story, you know.
Yep.
And it's the classic case. I mean, I hate to be corny, but it's the classic case of, you know, this conflict of good, evil, whatever you want to call it. So.
Well, and it works. It works.
And
it works so well. This is such a fun movie, and I want all the listeners that are listening right now to watch this movie this weekend. You have 2020 has been a shitty year. Let's turn it around. Watch a fun horror comedy movie. This is what you need to watch this weekend. I'm telling you, and because you're going to watch it this weekend, and then you're going to watch it again. This is one of those movies, I'm telling you right now, and there's several out there that, when I'm flipping through the cable or whatever, and I see one, I stop and I watch it, even though I've seen it 100 times. You know what I mean? This is going to be one of those types of movies.
I predict. Right. Well,
it's
I
just
can tell you, I'm now, just because I'm trying to get people to watch it more than once, I'm now telling people, if you haven't seen it at least 3 times, you haven't really seen the movie.
Right. It's fantastic, and I can see people watching it more than 3 times. This is such a cool movie. Well, I have to ask you, Ron, I know we're promoting House Sitter, the night they saved Zeke Field's brain. Are the gears turning? You think you want to do another movie now? After all the fun, this one, you got another 30 years, right?
I'm not sure what Richard's plans are or Mark's plans are, but I can tell you my plans are. I don't want to put myself in the one-hit wonder category, but this is the only film I've directed. It will be the only film I've directed. And I'm anxious. I just retired last month. I'm anxious to get back and do some acting. And my feeling is, I'm 63, and I'm not sure I want to be at 93 saying, so can I get some free shit from you to finish a movie?
I hear you.
So,
oh, man. Well,
I read a review on the movie, and one of the things the review said was, Robin Nyan has only made one movie in his life, and I'm thinking, I don't know if that's insulting or whatever, but it's like, it's true, but it was kind of depressing. It was like, wow. And I'm not being I'm not being weird about it, but one night I'm driving into San Francisco with a guy that did the sound at Skywalker, and he was having his motorcycle worked on. So I was going to drive him into where he was staying in San Francisco, and then I was going to pick him up in the morning, pick up his motorcycle and whatever. And we're driving into San Francisco, and he looks at me and he goes, "You know, Robin, you should have been making movies for the last 30 years. That, or beat myself up over that, or I can't, you know." And he was trying to, he was telling me as a compliment, like, you know, this is a cool movie. It's too bad you haven't made more movies. I don't know what would have happened with my life if this version of this movie would have been released in 1988. I don't know. You know, obviously, nobody's going to know. It certainly would have been different. I wouldn't have been thinking about finishing this movie for 30 years. But the reality is the reality of what's happening right now, and I get that. And Richard and I have done a few of these sometimes together, and in this case, myself. Richard is back in Michigan dealing with some things. And I can't tell you how cool and exciting. I didn't know what was going to happen, but it's beyond my wildest, crazy dreams, including yourself, just sitting here on a Friday afternoon having you tell me, and I'm not being a dick. I'm just saying, for you to go, "I love this movie." It's like, wow, this is crazy. I appreciate every little moment that is happening from finishing this movie. And it never seemed to me, all the people that worked on it, all the people that helped out, all the favors that happened, all the love that went on to making this film, it should be out there. And now it's out there.
Absolutely.
So, you know, sometimes things should happen.
You know, absolutely, absolutely. I was going to say, don't, you know, in this process, it's, don't say, you know, don't think too much of, well, what would my wife and I. You got to remember, you were already doing deals naked in a hot tub on top of the castle in Kalamazoo. I think there's nobody in the world can say that. You know, that's besides you. That's amazing.
There's only three of us. Well, I appreciate it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
man.
All good.
Well, it is.
It's all good.
It's a fantastic. And I tell you, I'm going to look you up. I'm so glad we met. You know, next time I'm out out west there, once the world shakes out a little, matter of fact, my wife's been bugging me. She's never been to California, and she's like, you know, this year we had all these plans and going out, you know, doing Vegas and going up and down the coast and all that, you know, and she, you know, I'm going to show her Big Sur and LA, you know, the whole bit,
yeah.
And you just couldn't do it this year, but. That's next year.
No,
I will definitely. We will have a glass of club soda together somewhere. You know?
Yes.
We have to.
Well,
I know
I look.
You know, and I want to hear them.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to you being here, and you and Richard and I, and maybe Mark's down here visiting, but whatever. Yes, absolutely, get together, and it's all good. It's all good. Yeah, I get your travel plans being disrupted. It's the first time in my entire life I've never been back in Michigan during the summertime, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. But,
and I just, because of everything. So, you know, when it happens, it happens. I really appreciate, I know we all appreciate the fact you're pushing the movie, really trying to get it out there and trying to, you know, there's a part of me, a big part of me, and I don't, I'm not trying to bullshit or anything, but I love the idea of the movie getting out and about more than anything. I think with all of this is that people see it, you know, and I've been in auditoriums where the movie's played at the film festival and people laugh. And I don't know if there's anything better medicine than right now what's going on is just sitting there laughing. Pretty good stuff. Pretty good medicine.
Absolutely. Hey, and I'm glad you're working with Leo Mark too. Those cats don't mess around, man. This is going to be everywhere. And today is the big day, right? Today is the big day. When it's
the day before the day before Halloween, but it certainly is. It's out there. I mean, it's been out there for the last week, I guess, 2 weeks, for DVD and Amazon and a lot of different Vimeo and a couple other streaming services. And I think we're going to get actually on other streaming services and then try to lay the groundwork for the big push next summer with the drive-in theaters. My feeling right now is there's one scene where some breasts are shown during the movie, and I think we need to do something with that, create a different joke. It seems like families going to see. Well, I just think that, you know, at drive-ins, people don't mind seeing heads cut off, but they don't want to see that woman's breasts. So, you know, we'll figure that out for the before we do the drive-in version.
What a quote. What a quote.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
Everybody's been great at Leo Mark, and everybody's been great with the October, not Fest, but.
Yeah, October. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Robin,
yeah, everybody.
It's so great to meet you. And, you know, whatever I can do to help, you know, I got your back, man. Whatever I can do to help.
I think you're doing a great
job.
Yeah, man. Just getting it out and about. So. I want to say thank you so much for letting this happen and let me pontificate about me. A lot of people get sick of that, but, you know, I guess this is when you do it. And keep pushing the movie, and I hope people enjoy it. And anybody that's listening, thank you so much. And here we are. But if you do come out to California, please let us know. And I'd love to sit down and hang out and have a cup of coffee.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just want to say, in case, you know, there's any big movie producers out there, you know, people with just big fat checkbooks and whatnot, Robin's absolutely right, and others have said it before him. The story of how this movie got made is a movie unto itself. So, you know, if you need to get a hold of me, I'll get you in touch with Robin and make that happen. Gold, man.
Right.
So inspiring.
Right.
So inspiring. Oh, man.
I guess I need to start figuring out who's going to play me. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to sign off, and I heard the dogs come outside, and my wife come outside, and I'm going to go see what's what. Thank you so much.
Is it you?
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate to those people listening, but I really, really appreciate, you know, making this happen. It's very, very cool.
Absolutely, man. Well, have a great Halloween, you and the missus and the dogs.
Yes, yes, yes. Happy Halloween to all and you. Take care.
See you later, man. Well, there you go, folks. How about that? We had an extra long show today, but it was fascinating. It's our Halloween special, and it is just I couldn't have asked for a better show leading into the holiday weekend here. And, you know, like I said, we're sitting here talking and everything, and I was just so fascinated. We have links up on our show page to the official Facebook page, the website, all the places, and it absolutely is available on Amazon Prime. Man, you could rent this for a couple bucks on Amazon. I would buy it personally just so you could have it, but that's just me. You know, be the best 20 bucks you ever spent is all I'm saying. All I'm saying. And very, very cool. Well, everybody, I want everybody to have a good Halloween. Remember, I say this on every episode. If you're going, you know, the world's a weird place right now. If you're going out to do your grocery shopping or what have you, be kind to people. Nobody wants any grief, especially the people working. You know, they're putting up with stuff all day. They don't need it from anybody else. So just smile, wear your mask. Let's knock this out so we can get this film into drive-ins and stuff. I think that's a great idea. Okay, folks, I am out of here. We will be back next Wednesday. So we will see you then. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio. Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.